Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sutta Uvacha. Jagrahe purasham rupam bhagavan maharadivi sambhutam shodasakalam adaloka sisrikshaya. Translation. Sutta said, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purushan incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus at first there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Purport. The Bhagavad Gita states that the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, maintains these material universes by extending his plenary expansions. So this Purusha form is the confirmation of the same principle. The original personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, who is famous as the son of King Vasudeva, King Nanda, is full with all opulences, all potencies, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Part of his opulences are manifested as impersonal Brahman, and part of his opulences is manifested as Paramatma. This Purusha feature of the same personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the original Paramatma manifestation of the Lord. There are three Purusha features in the material creation, and this form, who is known as the Karana Dakashayi Vishnu, is the first of the three. The others are known as Garbo Dakashayi Vishnu and the Shiro Dakashayi Vishnu, which we shall know one after another. The innumerable universes are generated from the skin holes of this Karana Dakashayi Vishnu. And in each one of the universes, the Lord enters as Garbo Dakashayi Vishnu. So as there's some more people here that haven't been following along, I'll just bring it up to date. The sages of Namasranya ask 6 questions. In chapter 2, the first, second, third, and fourth questions were answered. The first question is, what is the ultimate and absolute good? The second question is, what is the essence of these scriptures? So in chapter 2, most of chapter 2 dealt with answering those questions. In fact, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam will answer those questions. But chapter 2 dealt with answering those questions. The absolute and ultimate good in the essence of the scriptures is pure devotional service. And Sutta Goswami also explained how it gradually purifies the consciousness. The third question was also answered, for what purpose does Krishna appear? That was the last verse in the second chapter. The Lord of the universe maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. In assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. He performs pastimes. The reason he appears is to perform pastimes to attract us to Krishna and our constitutional position as his servant. Spiritual life means to change our desire from the desire to be the enjoyer to the desire to be the servant. So when we hear about Krishna and how attractive he is, we become attracted to Krishna, but we also become attracted to our position as his servant. So that was also, so he answered that question. And he also answered the fourth question. And the fourth question was to explain Krishna's incarnations in terms of how he creates this material world. Basically, Krishna has two different types of pastimes in this world. One is the pastime of creating the world, And then the other type of pastime are the leelas, or activities of entering into the world and performing various pastimes. To give us subject matter to hear about, and also to regulate the creation, the purpose of which is to liberate and purify the conditioned souls. So at the end of the second chapter, there was also a description of the Purusha avatars. Purusha avatars means the three avatars that are mentioned here, the Vishnus. And they expand in three ways to regulate and maintain the creation. Karana Dakashai Vishnu expands the ingredients of the creation. Garbo Dakashai Vishnu enters into each universe and animates it. And through him, Lord Brahma assembles the elements. And Shiro Dakashai Vishnu, he enters into each atom. And as the super soul, the Paramatma. So these were described, and those who are following along from the beginning would have heard the descriptions of the Purusha avatars. Now they are being described again. But they're being described again for a different purpose. To answer the fifth question. The fourth question is to describe the Purusha avatars. The fifth question is to describe Krishna's incarnations as the Leela avatars. You know, Nisringadeva, Vamanadeva, Varaha, etc. So the reason why the Purusha avatars are discussed in relationship to that is because the Leela avatars come into the creation through the Purusha avatars. So to describe the Leela avatars, you know, in a like kind of a scholarly and sequential way, they first describe the Purusha avatars again. That's why they're being described again here. So he'll give another summary of the Purusha avatars. There's another reason this is being done, which will be described later in this chapter. In text 28 of this chapter is a very famous verse that's called the Paribhasa Sutra. The next class will be on that. And basically, there'll be one class on just that one verse. Because it is the Maharati verse, the emperor verse of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Emperor subjugates or rules others. This verse rules every other concept in the Bhagavatam. It's the theme. And every verse has to take its meaning from this verse, which describes Krishna's supremacy. So that's going to be brought out also as they describe the Purusha avatars and Leela avatars. And so therefore I'll have to discuss this verse again. So now getting to text one, this is, you know, this is almost like the Bible. In the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form. You know, like God said, let there be light. It happens a little bit differently. So Karana Dakashai Vishnu, from him, another thing it says in the beginning of the creation, it says, this is very important, will be discussed later, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam Bhagavan Mahat Adibi. Purusham Rupam, the Lord or Bhagavan, basically Krishna, expands, he accepts the form of the Purusha avatars. So the Purusha avatars are coming from Krishna. In other words, it's the beginning of establishing this general theme that although there are many incarnations, Krishna is not just an incarnation, he's the source of the incarnations. Because here he's the source of the Purusha avatars, and the incarnations come from the Purusha avatars. So later on, in listing the incarnations or Leela avatars, Krishna is also listed as a Leela avatar. So the question comes, is he the source or an incarnation? Is he a source of incarnation, or is he an incarnation that comes from the Leela avatars? So that question will have to be discussed, and that's the basis of the Krishna conscious philosophy, that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He's the original. So these set of verses will eventually explain that. Because even though it'll be described in the fifth verse that all the incarnations come through Shira Dakta Shai Vishnu. And then they list, I think, 20 prominent incarnations, and Krishna is listed as one of them. So then the question is he an incarnation or is he the source? And then after they're all discussed, then there's another verse that also says that Krishna is Bhagavan. And then I'm going to discuss that. It's going to take a whole class. So here there's two types of creation. Atra sargas visargas cha stitir poshanam utaya. These are the 10 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam discussed in the second canto. Atra sargas visargas cha. There's sarga and visarga. Sarga is the first creation. It means the elements are made. And visarga is the second creation. They're assembled. So the first creation, when they're made, the material elements, that's by Shiro, that's by Karana Dakshai Vishnu. He makes the elements. And we're going to read also from the purport today how that exactly happens. Now, in the purport, I'm going to read further in the purport. I generally don't read all the purports. James knows that. But I want to read from the purport because it's actually one of my favorite purports. I'm not particular, I can't say I'm a creation buff, but it's a very interesting philosophical concept. Prabhupada wants to explain why this is happening. Why is God manifesting himself? Why is God manifesting himself? Why is God doing this? So this next section, he's describing the reason why Krishna created this material world. Because it's going to describe the Purusha avatars. And then the Leela avatars, which appear in the material world. So why is Krishna doing all this? So Prabhupada explains it. It's one of my favorite purports, because it's really like, you know, such clear philosophy. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also mentioned that the material world is created at certain intervals and then again destroyed. This creation and destruction is done by the supreme will because of the conditioned souls or the Nitya Buddha living beings. The Nitya Buddha or the eternally conditioned souls have the sense of individuality or ahankara which dictates them sense enjoyment, which they are unable to have constitutionally. That's the sutra for the material world. That you want sense gratification or independence of Krishna or ahankara, false ego, which dictates them sense enjoyment, which you are unable to have constitutionally. Because you're unable to have sense gratification constitutionally, you can only have it in dream or illusion. And that's Maya. Maya comes from that sense of ahankara or desire for sense gratification, which cannot be had by constitution. And therefore there's an energy of Krishna that puts you in the illusion that you're the enjoyer and the controller. And that's the material world. And it's made for the purpose of rectifying or changing that consciousness. The Lord is the only enjoyer, and all others are enjoyed. The living beings are predominated enjoyers, but the eternally conditioned souls, forgetful of this constitutional position, have strong aspirations to enjoy. The chance to enjoy matter is given to the conditioned souls in the material world. And side by side, they are given the chance to understand their real constitutional position. So you get to flounder about in this illusion that you're the enjoyer, which has to be frustrated by your own nature. And at the same time, the material world gives you a chance to understand their real, your real position. those fortunate living entities who catch the truth and surrender unto the lotus feet of Vasudeva after many, many births in the material world, join the eternally liberated souls, and thus are allowed to enter into the kingdom of God. So the fortunate souls who get to catch the truth. So the image giving here is that the material universes, you'll see, they manifest, which includes all the conditioned souls. And then when Karnadakshay Vishnu breathes in, then it becomes unmanifest. And in that one breath of his, which is trillions of years of our lives, we have a chance to catch the truth. And if we don't catch the truth, we go back in. But that's the whole purpose of the creation, to catch the truth. And Maya is playing so many tricks with us and presenting the illusion that we're the enjoyers and controllers in so many ways. And as the material civilization advances, it advances in ahankara or false ego, or it advances in the ability to put us under illusion. Just like we're giving this lecture here in New York. You know, material civilization is at the height of its facility and ability to delude and fool us that we're independent from Krishna, we're the enjoyers. It's such an irreligious place. After this, such fortunate living entities need not come again within the occasional material creation. But those who cannot catch the constitutional truth are again merged in the Mahatattva at the time of the annihilation of the material creation. When the Mahatattva is again set up, when the creation is again set up, this Mahatattva is again let loose. This Mahatattva contains all the ingredients of the material manifestation, including the conditioned souls. So the part of the spiritual world that's covered, the Mahatattva, includes the conditioned souls. Primarily, this Mahatattva is divided into 16 parts, namely the 5 gross material elements, and the 11 working instruments or senses. It is like the cloud in the clear sky. So this is explaining, Prabhupada is now explaining, Sambhutam Shodhasakalam. With the intention of creating, he made these material elements. This is how the illusion is created. In the spiritual sky, the effulgence of Brahman is spread all around, and the whole system is dazzling in spiritual light. The Mahatattva is assembled in some corner of the vast, unlimited spiritual sky, and the part which is thus covered by the Mahatattva is called the material sky. This part of the spiritual sky, called the Mahatattva, is only an insignificant portion of the whole spiritual sky. And within this Mahatattva, there are innumerable universes. All these universes are collectively produced by Karana Dakshay Vishnu, called also the Mahavishnu, who simply throws his glance to impregnate the material sky. It's a very nice description of creation. Any questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, you're saying before how the Leela avatars come through the Purusha avatars?
Yeah.
I was just wondering what you mean by that.
I'll discuss that when we get to text 5.
Okay.
Because it specifically will be stated there, so we can discuss it in context. Text 2. Yasyam vasi shayanasya yoga nidram patanbata nabiradham bujarasid brahma visvasvijampati. A part of the Purusha lies down within the water of the universe from the navel lake of his body. From the navel lake of his body sprouts a lotus stem, and from the lotus flower atop this stem, Brahma, the master of all engineers in the universe, becomes manifest. So this is describing sarga, visarga, secondary creation. First creation is the material elements, then the secondary creation when the universe is a form, Garbo Dakshay Vishnu enters into them. He He's lying within the universe, which is full with the water, half full with the water of his body. This is described here. And from the navel of Brahma, from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu has sprung the lotus, the stem of the lotus flower, the birthplace of Brahma. Brahma is described here. It's very interesting. He's described as Brahma, Vishva Srijampati. He is the master of the engineers. Because his engineering task is so unique that he has to create, in other words, as Krishna is creating the material world, and I don't want to go so deep into this right now, but he has to create even the material bodies of the living entities, which move and transform according to their past desires and deeds. Can you imagine that type of creation task? Your field of activities, which is called your body, has to move and transform according to your past deeds and your past desires to suit your particular karma. What an engineering task that is. Such intelligence to understand the subtle workings of a living entity and what he actually has done in many, many millions of lives and to create the world, how it moves. But he's actually the secondary creator. So it's described, Vishva Srijam, the engineer, the creator of everything. He's the pati, he's the master. So this is actually Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And then Prabhupada also, in the purport again, he discusses about Karanadakshay Vishnu. Karana means cause. He's the cause, the original cause, and he lies in the causal ocean. And by him, the material elements don't manifest on their own, right? It's God, who, in his form as Karanadakshay Vishnu, which impregnates them. So they may be moving, but they're not moving independently. Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. So material nature has no power to create independently of him. Prabhupada, James, you'll see in the second part of the purport, it really discusses that extensively. They have no, and then he gives the example, and this, I think it must be some logic, nyaya. We should not expect milk from the fleshy bags on the neck of a goat, although they look like breastly nipples. Similarly, we should not expect any creative power from the material ingredients. We must believe in the power of the Purusha who impregnates Prakriti or nature. So that's Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Now, there's going to be some more discussion of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Yasya vayava samsthanai kalpato loka vistara Tadvai bhagavato rupam vishuddha sattvam urjitam. It is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha. But he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual existence, par excellence. So basically what happens is, I think that, yeah, this is going to be discussed again at the end of the chapter. But when God enters as Garbhadakshay Vishnu in the universe, he animates it. So in one sense, and the universe, and the elements are coming from him also. So one sense, the universe is God, and another sense, it's not. Because it's his energy. But the identification with the universe as God, called the Vishvarup or Virat Rupa, he's saying here, is an imagination. It's kalpita. Just like we think that the body is the self, but the self is something different. So we think the universe is God. Although in one sense it is, because it's his energy. So this is discussed here, but we should understand that God is Vishuddham Sattvam Urjitam. He's completely beyond that. God is something else besides matter and the universe. He's completely beyond that. Even though he enters and animates it. Just like the self is actually beyond the body. Although in one sense, we address the person by addressing the body. So in the purport again, this is describing the transcendental position of God. Even though he enters into the universes, he remains beyond it and he's transcendental. But Prabhupada in the purport, though, mentions how, first of all, he mentions how this type of meditation on the universe as God, and this is also to be discussed later, so I don't want to discuss it too extensively now. It's good for the impersonalists. Did he mention for the materialist here too? It's good for the impersonalists because the personalists tend to, he said, to him the form means something of this material world, and therefore an opposite conception of the absolute is necessary in the beginning. So the impersonalists, they think that God means something opposite from this material world. And because there's form in this material world, then they have to concentrate on something impersonal. But that's not the absolute conception of God. So for the impersonalists, they can think of God's energy as God's form in the universal form, and therefore develop a personal conception. So he states that the conception of the Virat Rupa, especially for the impersonalists, is thus non-different from the eternal form of the Lord. Because it's the potency of God, so it's non-different. So they can think in that way and develop a personal conception. But the eternal form of the Lord exists prior to the creation of the Mahatattva. And it is stressed here that the eternal form of the Lord is par excellent, spiritual, or transcendental to the modes of material nature. So God's form is not a product of matter. It's beyond. So that point is being made. In relationship to discussing Garbha, Dukkha, Shai, Vishnu, who in one sense accepts the universe as his form, just as the soul accepts the body, as he enters into it and animates it. Text 4. Pashyantyado rupam adabra chakshusha sahasrapado rupajana nadbhutam sahasramurda shravanakshinasikam sahasramolyambara kundalolasat. The devotees, with their perfect eyes, see the transcendental form of the Purusha, who has thousands of legs, thighs, arms, and faces, all extraordinary. In that body, there are thousands of heads, ears, eyes, and noses. They are decorated with the thousands of helmets and glowing earrings and are adorned with garlands. So this is the Prabhupada in the next purport said, This Garbha Dakshay Vishnu is glorified in the Vedas, in the hymns of the Garbha Stuti, which begins with the description of the Lord having thousands of heads, etc. So, I really tried to understand this verse clearly, and my understanding is that in the previous verse it said that Krishna's body is spiritual existence par excellence. He's beyond that. So when one actually becomes a devotee and pure, he can actually see God within the universe. But he'll see not that matters the universe, but he'll actually see God within the universe. And how will he see God? Because God, in the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of 10th chapter, before they describe the universal form in the 11th chapter, Krishna says that with a spark of my splendor, I'm pervading this whole universe. So the whole universe is just a plenary portion of God is, it's a portion of a plenary portion of God, but just, not even his whole power. just a part, and he pervades the whole universe. He actually enters everywhere in the universe as actually Paramatma. But it's also Garbhadakshay Vishnu also saying. So he enters into the whole universe. So when you actually become a devotee and become pure, you can actually see God everywhere. So this conception is therefore given in the Vedas. He's pervading everywhere, and you can see beyond matter, and then you can actually see God everywhere. Prabhupada quotes from the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Charita Bhakti. You see in the heart of hearts, you see everywhere. In every atom, God is there. So that's why it says you'll see form of the Purusha has thousands of legs, because you'll see him everywhere. But you have to become a devotee. He is formless to the neophytes, but he is the transcendental form to the expert servitor. So the neophytes, they'll just see that God in his energy is spread everywhere. But the devotees will see, who have devotion, that although his energy is spread everywhere, he's in everyone's heart. And that's God. He's also aloof. So this is seen. Yes.
Let me just ask a question to make sure that I'm distinguishing between the three. So you have the spiritual world.
Yes.
And then you have like a cloud-like area that's where the Mahatapa is.
Yeah.
And then Karna Dakshai Vishnu
impregnates it.
Goes and lies down on the causal ocean.
Yeah.
Impregnates that.
Yeah.
And then how do the universe manifest?
I think they come from his body. He sits down in that part of the universe. They come from his body. Mm-hmm. He expands himself again into Garbo Dakshai Vishnu. So he enters into each universe to make it work for the purpose of creation. Mm-hmm. And then the next verse will describe that he expands himself again into Sharadakshai Vishnu to enter into every atom. So he's everywhere. It's nice, even these type of descriptions, huh? It focuses your consciousness on what this world really is, right? And if you don't have this kind of philosophical conception, and you don't hear the Bhagavatam, then when you're here in New York, you know, you just see Maya. You see everything is separate from God. You don't actually see, you don't see what's really here.
Can I ask one more trivial point?
I'd like to keep on the verses if it's related to the verses.
Well, it's kind of related to the first verse.
Yeah.
I was just wondering how Prabhupada describes the material world as like an insignificant portion of the spiritual world. And then other places he says it's one quarter.
One quarter is ek pad vibhuti. It doesn't mean it's measured because you can't actually compare them. Mm-hmm. But it means that it's not God's full potency, the material world. And we put so much significance to the whole thing, and even the whole thing. Here, he says, by a spark of my splendor, I pervade, in the Bhagavad Gita, the last birth in the tenth, I pervade everything. So whether we have to get a measuring cup and measure out the different ingredients, we should understand the point that's being made. Mm-hmm. What's actually trying to be communicated. And really what's ultimately being communicated is our own insignificance. James, are we still on the first side?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go to the next verse. Etanana vitaranam nidhanam bijam avyayam yasyam shamsena srijanti devativyan naradaya. This form, that's Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the second manifestation of the Purusha, is the source of the indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations within the universe. From the particles and portions of this form, different living entities like demigods, men and others are created. So the Purusha, after creating innumerable universes in the Mahatattva, entered into each of them as the second Purusha, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So that's described. And from him comes. Now, it says that bijam avyam, indestructible seed. It's like a seed which just has avyam, unlimited potency. It's just producing, 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 producing. Now, it's actually Shiradakshay Vishnu. Prabhupada describes why this describes Shiradakshay Vishnu. The Vishnu is the plenary portion of the Garbho Dakshay Vishnu. So his plenary portion is, plenary means full. Garbho Dakshay Vishnu expands as Shiradakshay Vishnu. Is the super soul of universal life, and he's known as the maintainer of the universe or Shiradakshay Vishnu. Shira means milk. He sits in the milk ocean. So the three features of the original Purusha are thus understood, and all the incarnations within the universe are emanations from the Shiradakshay Vishnu. I'm not sure exactly what the process is. It's whether he's like, you know, Shiradakshay Vishnu is like, immigration to the material world. You know, and Varaha and Vamana are lining up to get their visas. Or whether, I have to check this out, or whether they're expansions of him. It appears that they're expansions of Shiradakshay Vishnu. The incarnations that kind of enter into the world in one sense. But the point, then the Leela avatars are going to be described. But all the incarnations, and in the purport, Prabhupada will discuss all the different incarnations. There are prominent Leela avatars. There are the Guna avatars. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. In the purport, Prabhupada explains how they're all coming from Garbho Dakshay Vishnu. But the Vishnu, Shiva is coming from Garbho Dakshay Vishnu, Brahma is coming from, but Vishnu, that's Shiradakshay Vishnu. And then he describes the Manus in one breath of Karanadakshay Vishnu is a lifetime of Lord Brahma. One day of Lord Brahma, which is 12 hours. I think it's 12 or 24 hours. One day is 1,000 Divya Yugas. Divya Yuga is when you add up Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga, which is 4,300,000 years. 1,000 of those make 12 hours of Lord Brahma. And within that 24 hours. Make 24 hours. So one day, in one day of Lord Brahma, there's 14 incarnations of Manu, or kings, to rule the universe and lawgivers. So that means each Manu lives for 78 Divya Yugas, or 78 times 4,300,000. So there are 14. And Krishna appears every day in the seventh, the life of the seventh Manu. Krishna's appearing every day. In one day of Brahma, Krishna appears. So he appears in the seventh Manu, in the 28th Divya Yuga. So many innumerable Manus. Prabhupada said there are 500,000 Manus in the duration of Brahma's life. So how many incarnations are coming from that bijam avyam, that indestructible seed? The Manus are coming, the Leela avatars, the Yuga avatars. In each Yuga, just imagine each Yuga. So there are 1,000 Yuga cycles. There are 1,000 Yuga cycles. So in each Yuga, there's 4 Yuga avatars. So in a day of Lord Brahma, there's 4,000 Yuga avatars that are appearing. And there's different colors, and Lord Chaitanya appears in Kali Yuga. Dwarpa Yuga, Lord Krishna black, different colors. So all these are mentioned in the scriptures. Then there are vibhutis or shaktivesh avatars that are appearing. The shaktivesh avatars means that Krishna invests living entities, or he comes himself to manifest particular potencies, to do particular work as if he was doing them. We're still in the first side? As if he was doing them. I always, you know, like, Prithu is the shaktivesh avatar for ruling. He was ruling as if Krishna was ruling. Vyas was the shaktivesh avatar for writing and editing. He was editing as if Krishna was editing. So bijam, avyam, they're all coming. So this is the material world. Yes.
Krishna only comes once every, during the seventh mana?
Yeah.
Who comes during Dwarpa Yuga and all the other Divya Yugas? Is there an incarnation of Krishna in every...
I don't know who comes. Krishna comes once in the lifetime of Lord Brahma. Not every. I believe he comes once. Every day of Lord Ramakrishna appears. Once. I don't know what different colors can be different personalities. Okay. That was it. Text 6. Sa eva pratamam deva kumaran sagamasvita chachara dushtaram brahma brahmacharyam makanditam. Translation. First of all, in the beginning of creation, there were the four unmarried sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, who being situated in a vow of celibacy, underwent severe austerities for realization of the absolute truth. So now the incarnations that are appearing from Shirdakshai Vishnu are being described. There'll be a partial list because the next to last verse, the last verse of listing the incarnations describe that they're innumerable. Even in text 28, which describes the supremacy of Krishna, specifically it says, Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa. It says, all these incarnations, Ete Chamsa. Cha means, Amsa means, are part of the, they're actually part of the Purusha avatars, or parts of the parts of the Purusha avatars. All these, Ete Cha. And cha means and others, which are not listed. So the prominent ones are listed. And when we see the descriptions of the... So we'll see with all these incarnations that are listed that they're appearing to either directly or indirectly assist in the Lord's... It's to assist in the purpose of the material world, which is to enlighten the conditioned souls. So we'll see. There are so many incarnations, but that's their unity of purpose. It may be different. It may be from Kapila Dev, who assists in that purpose by propounding transcendental knowledge, to an incarnation who come specifically to relieve the distress of a particular devotee, or an incarnation who comes to assist in the, you know, establish the vanashram system, or not assist, but to help establish or correct when there's a discrepancy in the principles of religion. Or they may come, like Lord Rishabhadev, to exhibit a particular quality we need for self-realization. So we'll see. And at this, we'll see this in describing the incarnations. At the same time, we'll probably cover quite a few. At the same time, it's just nice even to briefly hear about them. And many of them will be discussed later in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's the real purpose for the incarnations to appear. not just to establish religious principles, because Krishna can do that in other ways, but to provide us subject matter about God so that we can become attracted to his qualities and therefore want to become his devotee. And that's the basis of self-realization. The basis of self-realization is simply our desire. I want to serve Krishna. Because we're here because we don't want to be devotees. So the process of self-realization ultimately is changing our desire. And then nourishing that desire that I want to satisfy Krishna. And you want to satisfy someone who you are attracted to. So these different incarnations will display different aspects of Krishna's qualities. So here it is, the four Kumaras at the beginning of the creation. So they show us the importance of celibacy. Because at the beginning of the creation, they're manifested as the sons of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma's service right at the beginning of the creation, his sons refuse. And therefore they're the Kumaras. Kumara means the age of 1 to 5. So they had their mystic potency. They preferred to remain at that age so they wouldn't have to get entangled in procreation. At the same time, as Prabhupada mentions, by that austerity, brahmacharya, by their austerities, they became qualified to realize the absolute truth. Not by birth, but by their austerities and qualification, they were able to become perfect. Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya vasatala gatam mihim udarisyan upadatta yagesha shokaram vipu. The supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation, and for the welfare of the earth, he lifted the earth from the nether regions of the universe. The indication is that for each and every incarnation of the personality of Godhead, the particular function executed is also mentioned. There cannot be any incarnation without a particular function. And such functions are always extraordinary. The Lord has a particular purpose. According to the purpose, he manifests a particular form, which is transcendental. Or it actually is his form. So the Lord is transcendental. We cannot look at the Lord and think he's a manifestation of the material world. In other words, his body is completely transcendental. Janma karma chame divyam. So janma karma chame divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha. That we have to understand that although he appears in a so-called ordinary way, his activities are janma karma are transcendental. So this is also important to understand. So it's a real challenge that the Lord appears in the incarnation of a boar. But the whole Bhagavatam is meant to bring us to the point we can understand Krishna's pastimes. How Krishna is transcendental. How he's the Supreme Lord. Although his activities and form in a way, according to our material perception, without proper knowledge, without proper purity, we may ascribe to them very ordinary things. So if you can understand that the Lord, and I believe it's the first incarnation that's actually described in the third canto is Lord Bor. So Borijan was making the point, I remember this, I wish I could repeat it properly, is that, you know, the whole Bhagavatam is made to understand Krishna. And in one sense, it's almost, you know, more difficult to even understand Krishna's form as God. Dancing with the gopis, you know, childhood activities, etc. So the Bhagavatam, it trains you and deepens your understanding how to see Krishna's transcendental position, despite the appearance otherwise. Anyway, we'll read on and just hear. Tritiyam rishi sargam vai devarshitvam upetyasa tantram satvatam achashta naishkarmyam karmanam yata. In the millennium of the rishis, the personality of God had accepted the third empowered incarnation in the form of Devarshi Narada, who was a great sage among the demigods. He collected expositions of the Vedas which deal with devotional service and which inspire non-fruit of action. So he was an empowered, Prabhupada says he was an empowered incarnation. Or is it be, I think it was mentioned in the, I think it's the fifth verse, that some incarnations have the Lord's, carry one of the Lord's vibhutis. Vibhuti means opulence or power. So Narada was carrying that opulence and power to explain specifically devotional service. Sri Narada informs those foolish fruitive workers how to realize the reality of happiness. He gives direction to the diseased men of the world, how one's present engagement can lead one to the path of spiritual emancipation. This is going to be described later on, how you can use your... The physician directs the patient to take treated milk in the form of curd for his sufferings from indigestion due to his taking another milk preparation. So Narada actually is explaining to Vyasadeva, you know, the same thing that causes the disease can be used therapeutically, just like when someone has some stomach ailment caused by milk. Transforming milk into curd. Curd means yogurt. In India, they call yogurt curd. Transforming the milk can cure one. So same thing, our work, our fruitive work, our selfish work, our work according to our nature, if used to satisfy Krishna, the same work transformed by the consciousness of satisfaction can purify us and can become karma yoga or devotional service. So Narada was an empowered incarnation on how to take the Vedic knowledge and point the way to devotional service for the ordinary people. And here it describes, he's the author of the Narad Pancharatra, which is an exposition of the Vedas, particularly for the devotional service of the Lord. This Narada Pancharatra trains the karmis, or the fruit of workers, to achieve liberation from the bondage of fruit of work by offering the results to Krishna. So you can see they all have these particular functions to push the conditioned souls towards surrender. Turiye dharma kala sarge nara narayana vrishi bhutvatmano pashamo petam akaro tuscharam tapa. So it's just nice actually just hearing. I think it even says that one who hears these incarnations morning and night will not take birth again in this material world. In the fourth incarnation, the Lord became Nara and Narayan, the twin sons of the wife of King Dharma. Thus he undertook severe and exemplary penances to control the senses. So the sannyasis are supposed to be the spiritual masters of the vanas and ashrams. In other words, they're at the top of society. So generally, we follow that which is highest. So what's highest in a vana ashram society is people who are exhibiting renunciation. It's so important for the society to have that example to inspire us for the correct thing. Again, in New York, they promote people who have the most sense enjoyment as the topmost people. And they package that as the most cool and respectable thing. And therefore, you see the whole society moves towards material enjoyment. But in a proper culture, the topmost person is the person who renounces everything. That's one of the opulences of Krishna, too, his six opulences, his renunciation. So it's important in society for those examples to be set. And if those examples are not set, then the society does not practice austerities or renunciation, and they don't become self-realized. Therefore, Krishna himself came, his twin, the incarnations of Nara, Narayan, to demonstrate tapasya, the voluntary acceptance of inconvenience for the purpose, bodily inconvenience for the purpose of self-realization. In other words, when you accept difficulty in terms of self-realization, that helps to detach you or abstract the consciousness from the material, from the bodily conception of life. If you're in the bodily conception of life, you cannot engage in self-realization. Therefore, the first incarnation exhibited celibacy. Because if you engage in illicit sex life, you become absorbed in the bodily concept of life, and you cannot make spiritual advancement. That's why we see, because in the Indian culture, we can see that people who are not brahmacharis and sannyasis, they take the sense gratification. They don't, you know, even in different spiritual paths, very rarely do they restrict sense gratification just to the procreation of God-conscious children. Therefore, they have this concept that if you're a married person, you can't become self-realized. That's why I see when some of our brahmacharis get married, then the Indians think this is crash, this is fall down. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. If one regulates it, dharma virudhe bhuteshu kamo sti paratarshiva. But if you don't regulate it, if you don't do it according to religious principles, you cannot be a transcendentalist because it absorbs one of the bodily concepts of life. Therefore, it's interesting that one of the incarnations is just to set the example of austerities to attract us. Any questions, Brahmananda? Panchama kapalo nama sidesha kala viplutam pravaschar suraye sankhyam tatvagrama vinirnayam. The fifth incarnation, named Lord Kapila, is foremost among perfected beings. He gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to a Suri Brahmana. For in course of time, this knowledge had been lost. So Krishna comes to give transcendental knowledge. He appears. So many ways he's promoting enlightenment and liberation. So we have to have gyan or understanding or knowledge that the soul is different than the body. Enlightenment means to make things distinct or clear. For again, if you shut the light off in the room, then you can't see anything. You don't have knowledge of anything. You can't make distinctions. So enlightenment or knowledge means to make distinctions. The first distinction is that the soul is different than the body. And the second distinction is that the soul is different than God. That's why Brahman or impersonal knowledge is not complete knowledge. Because it's just knowledge of the distinction between the soul and the body. But they cannot make the distinction between the soul and God. Therefore, Prabhupada says real knowledge or sambandhagyan is to know matter, spirit, and the controller of both. But anyway, the Supreme Lord comes and propounds various philosophies. This is Sankhya. You have to count or analyze the difference between things. How much time do I have left on this approximately? It's very important, so I can...
30 minutes.
Okay. Shastamatrera apatyatvam vritta prapto nasuya anvikshikim Alarkaya Pralada Dibya Uchivan. The sixth incarnation of the Purusha was a son of the sage Atri. He was born from the womb of Anasuya, who prayed for an incarnation. He spoke on the subject of transcendence to Alarka, Prahlad, and others, Yadu, Hai, etc. So, I'm not going to describe every, but every incarnation has a story that we should learn and hear, which will inspire us. But again, Dattatreya appeared to expound philosophy. Knowledge is such an important part of the creation. That's why Krishna says, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namaha. The cows and the Brahmins are very dear to Krishna. Why are the Brahmins very dear? Because they speak on his behalf. And the purpose of the creation is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada, and I think the first verse is that the conditioned soul, he's manifest into this world because he's still in ignorance, and the purpose is to catch the truth. The way the material nature works is just to purify us and humble us in such a way that we can have the proper consciousness to understand truth. But where does that truth come from? It comes from the Brahmins or the teachers. And therefore our movement is meant to train a class of Brahmins, because that's what's actually lacking in the society. So much can be said. Tata saptama akutyam ruchir yagya vijayata sayamadhyay suraganai apatsvayam bhuvantaram. The seventh incarnation was Yagya, the son of Prajapati Ruchi, and his wife Akuti. He controlled the period during the change of Swayambhuva Manu and was assisted by demigods such as his son Yama. So the there are demigods, they're administrators. So government has a purpose. There should be a government to organize the needs and management of society for the purpose of self-realization. So there's a universal government. And demigods, there's 33 million demigods, and they have different administrative posts. Plus, the king of the demigods is called Indra. So he has a very important post. So sometimes Krishna will come if there's not a suitable living entity to take that post. For example, Krishna sometimes appears as Lord Brahma. Generally, Lord Brahma is the most pious living entity. It's said in the Shastras, if you execute Vanashram system perfectly for 100 births, you can get the post of Lord Brahma. But when there's not a suitable pious soul, Krishna may come himself. Why? Because he's concerned with the management of universal affairs. Because they're managed according to his principles to make life peaceful and manageable for the purpose of self-realization. Ashtame merudevyam tu nabirjata arukrama darshiyan vartmadiranam sarvasramanamaskritam. The eighth incarnation was King Rishab, son of King Nabi, and his wife Merudev. In this incarnation, the Lord showed the path of perfection, which is followed by those who have controlled their senses and are honored by all orders of life. Again, similar themes are coming. So Rishabhadev came to exhibit extreme renunciation, complete abstinence from material pleasures, tapasya. There's a famous verse by Rishabhadev to his sons. It's so famous I don't remember it, but what is it? Kastam karman arate vid nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kastam karman arate vid bujamye tapo divyam yena kaputra satvam shudye yasmad brahma sokyam. He advises his son, don't take to sense enjoyment, unrestricted sense enjoyment, which is also available to the stool-eating hogs. But to po divyam yena kaputra sattva. But take to austerities, divine renunciation of this material world.
shunyeds yasmad brahma sokyam tonantam. Anantam, unlimited brahma sokyam, unlimited pleasure. By coming in contact, when you renounce the senses, you can come in contact with the soul or the self. The nature of the self is ananda or pleasure. Because our austerities are not artificial. Our austerities, austerity for us is that despite the irrational impulses of the mind, we engage in our devotional service, whatever it is. Just by engaging fully in devotional service to satisfy Guru and Krishna, then automatically there's renunciation. Automatically there's inconvenience. And that renunciation and inconvenience for the sake of spiritual advancement detaches us from the body. So he set the example of the highest platform of sannyas, the highest level of renunciation. Because even in sannyas, there's Bahuja, Kudichak, Parivrajak Acharya, and Paramahamsa. So Bahujak, Duck, and Kudichak, I forgot the distinction, but it means the first level of sannyas is you live outside your village and they bring you food for a while. And then I think then you're on your own. And then when you get more renounced, then you just travel. Parirajakacharya. Pari means goes around. You just travel. And you completely depend on God. Like Narada Muni, even when he was five, he went to the forest and he traveled. And when you travel, you don't have a time to, you can't create the illusion, you can't be in the illusion that I'm the controller. We think that we're protecting our, in other words, when you stay in one place, you organize things for your sense gratification and you come in the illusion that I'm doing it, I'm controlling, I'm enjoying. So when you travel, and as a sannyasi, we should be simple. And in days of yours, they would travel through the forest. So they didn't make any plans, and they saw that Krishna still provided. He protected them in the forest, even though there's dangerous animals. He provided them with food. So they become free from the illusion that that they're the controllers and enjoyers. They see that actually God is the controller. There's many realizations that one could get. When you put yourself in a situation where it's beyond your, where it's obviously beyond your control. But it's a very high level to have that kind of dependence on God. Therefore, Brahman is really the only, Vanashram can also be discussed like this, that the Shudra has no, you can see who's Brahman, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Shudra, because Shudra has little faith in Krishna. Therefore, he has to work for someone. He has to take employment. He wants security. He wants his government pension. Vaishya has a little bit more faith. This is one way of looking at it. But his faith is still not fully developed because he has to cheat. For you, I make no profit. He has to lie. He can't completely depend on Krishna. Kshatriya also, his faith is more, but still, he doesn't have complete faith unless he gets a village or something to manage or rule. Otherwise, he'll feel, I will not be protected. But Brahman means complete faith. Brahman means complete faith. I can serve Krishna, Krishna will provide. Of course, we find that even difficult in this age to have such faith. You know, some effort has to be made. Otherwise, it does appear like you will starve. It takes even more faith to be a Brahmin in this age, in Kali Yuga, without this proper social system. So maybe there's a little bit more leeway for doing some things to maintain yourself. In the Vedic system, Brahmin would have faith. Krishna will provide. And we see examples in our society how difficult it was. That some men who were actually Brahmins just stayed and preached and somehow or other depended on Krishna, and they were maintained. But it takes faith. It takes trust that Krishna is God. So what to speak of the stages of sannyas until you ultimately get to the highest stage, which is Paramahamsa, where you make absolutely no effort for your own maintenance. No effort. It's like it's described like the python has complete faith. Just fun. The python just stays in the tree with complete faith that God will feed him. And he waits for a few days, and then, you know, sure enough, some animal comes by and he he falls off the tree and wraps himself around and swallows him, or swallows the animal, you know, maybe a pig, or, you know, some big animal, and then he has enough for a month or 2 months. So there's a parama, like Madhavendra Puri would never act for his own food, whatever Krishna would provide. You know, very. So Lord Rishabhadev specifically, he propagated his mission. At the last stage, he became completely aloof from bodily material needs, which is a rare stage not to be imitated by foolish men, but to be worshipped by all. You can see, so there's even incarnations that just exhibit the highest stages of renunciation. O Brahmanas, in the ninth incarnation, the Lord prayed for by sages, accepted the body of a king, Prithu, who cultivated the land to yield. I want to read the Sanskrit very verse. Rishabhir yachito beje navaman partivam vapu dugde mam oshadir vipras tenayam sa usatama. O Brahmana, in the ninth incarnation, the Lord prayed for by sages, accepted the body of a king, Prithu, who cultivated the land to yield various produces. And for that reason, the earth was beautiful and attractive. So Prithu is Shaktivesh avatar. God gives the potency to a living entity. He gives one of his bhutis or opulences to do some necessary service in his creation, as if God himself was doing it. So Prithu was the incarnation for ruling. He had the vibhuti to rule the world. So the king is necessary. Even we see in just an ordinary temple that for self-realization, a good manager is necessary. A strong manager is necessary. But not a despot or a tyrant. But a good manager, a strong leader. And before him, his son was named Anga. No, his son was Venu. His father was Venu, who was very, very cruel. So the Brahmins were in a great dilemma, because if they kept him, he would subjugate the Brahmins and not allow sacrifice, so the people would suffer. But if they removed him, there wouldn't be anybody powerful enough to deter the rogues and thieves from destroying the society. So you need strong leadership, but he has to be pious and under the Brahmins. If he's just strong leadership, then the Brahmins can't properly do sacrifice and the society goes to hell. And if he's weak in leadership, then the Brahmins and the rogues. So you need a person who's strong, but benevolent. And the Brahmins were in a great dilemma. They said, we feel like ants on a burning log, which is burning from both sides. Either way we turn, we're in so much trouble. Then finally what they did, they couldn't tolerate anymore. And with their Brahminical Tejas, they removed him. They killed him. And from his legs were churned the sinful reactions. From his arms came Prithu, who was both a strong, powerful leader and pious. So we can see how God is so concerned for his creation that it runs in the proper way to facilitate the enlightenment of the conditioned souls. Rupam sajagre mat 15. Rupam sajagre matsyam
chakshushodari sampave navyaropya mahimayam apadvaivasvatamanum.
When there was a complete inundation after the period of the chakshusha manu and the whole world was deep within water, the Lord accepted the form of a fish and protected by Vishvatamanu, keeping him up on a boat
So the form of the fish, matzah, again, to save the Vedas. How important is that knowledge? When the Supreme Lord creates with the creation, it's described to help us understand, with the creation, when he breathes, comes the Vedic knowledge. In other words, there's the creation and there's knowledge. The knowledge is how to utilize the creation. Without the instruction manual, then the machine becomes useless. So the machine of the material world, the engineering of the material world, Srijam, what is that? Vishva Srijam Pati. Brahma was described as the master engineer. So his engineering work, without the manual, has no value. So the Vedic knowledge tells us how to use the material world for the purpose of purification and spiritual advancement, directly or indirectly. So when that's lost, or that's endangered, the Supreme Lord will come. He's coming again and again and again for us, for our purification, for our enlightenment, directly or indirectly. Directly, he may speak Vedic knowledge. Indirectly, he may assist in the management of the creation. Here, he's protecting the Vedas. Interesting point in the purport. I'm sorry, because I really want to get up by the end of the class and finish this section, which is all the list of incarnations. But there's so many interesting points that you can read. Prabhupada talks in the purport about how there's a disagreement between the acharyas, whether or not there's a devastation at the end of each and every manu, or there's not. And Sridhar Swami and Jiva disagreed, and Vishwanath disagreed, and Jiva disagrees. You know, so it's an interesting point, which can be discussed some other time. Now, the acharyas have different perspectives sometimes. But one never takes sides for fear of committing offense. They understand they have different perspectives on the truth. It's the same truth, actually. And here also, he came to show special favor for the devotee and incarnated himself. Surasurana mudadim matnatam mandarachalam tadre kamata rupena prishta ekadashe vibhu. The 11th incarnation of the Lord took the form of a tortoise whose shell served as a pivot for the Mandarachala hill, which was being used as a churning rod by the theist and atheist of the universe. So this is also, I think, described in the 9th canto, the churning of the milk ocean. The Lord appeared in this pastime. It's also described by the commentators that the Lord has, for his incarnation, he sometimes has external and internal reasons for appearing. We don't have to think sometimes that one is better than the other necessarily. Internal means sarup lakshanam, his own reason. And sometimes the external reason, the tatastha lakshanam, is for others. So he appeared because there was some necessity here in terms of the regulation and maintenance of the universal creation. So he appeared out of duty. But it's described by the acharyas, his own reason was that Krishna wanted to polish the jewelry on his fingers. So when it was churning the milk ocean off of and he became the pivot, and he put his fingers up, you know, and he polished, so it was turning, so he polished the jewelry. That was his own reason. Tanvataram dvadasamam trayodashamam evaja apayatsarananyam mohinya mohiyansriya. In the 12th incarnation, the Lord appeared as Dandvantari. And in the 13th, he allured the atheist by the charming beauty of a woman and gave nectar to the demigods to drink. There's all different reasons. The Mohini Murti, Balaram and Vamana, carry the vibhuti, although some are Vishnu Tattva. They carry the vibhuti of the Lord's beauty. So he attracts us also by his beauty, by his knowledge, by his renunciation, by his fame, by his strength. So I think Dhanvantari also kept the medical science. So also he keeps us healthy for the purpose of self-realization. Pradyumna once told me that Prabhupada didn't like that he was sick and showed him how to do push-ups. Told me that. Chaturdasham Narasingham Vibra Daityendram Urjitam Dadara Karajar Uraiv Erakam Katakridyata. In the 14th incarnation, the Lord appeared as Nisringa and bifurcated the strong body of the atheist Hiranyakashipu with his nails, just as a carpenter pierces cane. So that we're going to study that in the 7th canto. Prabhupada doesn't put a purport here, and most of us know this story. But how attractive the Lord is, and how he comes to protect his devotees. How attractive that story is, showing the potency of God, how God is everywhere. So many, you know, just by that leela, so many important points are established. That ultimate liberation can only be had by the mercy of Krishna, not by our material powers. God is everywhere. That he protects his devotees.
Panchadasam vamanakam kritva gad advaram bale paratrayam yachamanam pratyadi shustripishtapam.
In the 15th incarnation, the Lord assumed the form of a dwarf brahmana vamana and visited the arena of sacrifice arranged by Maharaj Bali. Although at heart he was willing to regain the kingdom of the three planetary systems, he simply asked for a donation of 3 steps of land. So we can meditate. That pastime also will be described in the Bhagavata of Vamana. And Bali Maharaj, how the devotee sacrifices everything for the pleasure of the Lord, but loses nothing. Sometimes we make sacrifice, but all we give. But Krishna sometimes even may take away, but he only takes away because he wants to give. I see that very clearly. I saw that in my godbrother Keshava Bharti. He went through so much tribulations. I always got inspiration from him. Krishna took away one thing after another. And then he saw all his godbrothers were gurus, sannyasis, prestige, so many things. And Krishna just kept on taking one thing after another, and he just kept on tolerating. And what was the result at the end? Krishna took away everything and gave him Govardhan. Now he's happily living at Govardhan Hill in Prabhupada's ISKCON center. So I can see it. It looked like he was being disadvantaged because Krishna was just taking away everything. And all the godbrothers were becoming gurus and sannyasis and so much prestige, so much support, so much followers. And even though he was such a qualified man and such a powerful preacher, somehow it was just so hard. It went on for year after year after year, almost like he never got a break. So you were looking, oh, poor Keshava Bharti. But what was happening? Krishna took away everything. So some got fame, some got opulence, some got followers, and he got Govardhan. So many things to learn from these pastimes. Again, I don't want to speak too much because it's a whole story which we will be going over and learning the lessons and messages of that story. So Krishna comes with these leelas that give us such powerful impressions of different realizations we need to have faith in Krishna and advance in Krishna consciousness. So see how merciful Krishna is. He's just coming in so many different ways.
Avatare shodasame pashyan brahma druho nipan trisapta kritava krita kupito nishatra makaromahim.
In the 16th incarnation of the Godhead, the Lord, as Brigapati, annihilated the administrative class Kshatriyas 21 times, being angry at them because of their rebellion against the Brahmins, the intelligent class. Society has to be ruled by the brahmanas, by the head. So that when the kshatriyas became corrupt, Parashurama was a brahmin, an incarnation of God, took up the role as a kshatriya, and destroyed them. It says 21 times. I'm trying to figure out how you can destroy someone 21 times. I think it probably meant he repelled them again and again and again and again. He destroyed all the kshatriyas. Just because the varnashram system had become vitiated or corrupt, he came to establish it. We have to be very careful in our society also that we have a brahminical influence to guide the society. Otherwise, things will be done expediently and they won't be done efficiently. Yes?
I always thought it meant that he killed 21 generations of kshatriyas.
Yeah, okay, that's correct. He killed 21 generations of kshatriyas. But the point is there, why? Why he had to do that? See, the nature of the Brahmins, there may be a little bit hesitancy for action, restraint, because they're intellectual. Nature of kshatriyas is there'll be a lack of restraint. So if kshatriyas rule the society, then there'll be a lack of restraint. You know, there'll be empty-headed expansion. You know, it won't have the proper vision, although their power is necessary. So it's necessary for the Brahmins to see, it's just like a car. The kshatriyas are like the steering. They're very expert, but you need a brake. The Brahmins are like the brake. So if you just have the car with the steering and the gas pedal, it's very dangerous. You need a brake also. So Brahmins provide that intellectual restraint so that they do things not expediently, but for ultimate good. So it's important. Tata saptashe, tata saptadashe jata, satyavatyam parasurat, chakraveda taro shakya, trisva pumsopamedasa. Thereafter, in the 17th incarnation of Godhead, Sri Vyasadeva appeared in the womb of Satyavati through Parasara Muni, and he divided the one Veda into several branches and subsequent branches, seeing that the people in general were less intelligent. So Vyas is a post. It's not a particular person that appears in Kali Yuga. Vyas. To assimilate, to edit and assimilate, to assimilate and then edit the Vedic knowledge so that people can have access to the proper guidance and direction. To become enlightened, you need the proper direction in your life. That direction must mean that you must understand the Vedic knowledge, because the Vedic knowledge are meant to give direction to human life. So Vyas comes. It's a post. But sometimes Krishna comes himself also as Vyas, just as he came as Yajna for the post of Indra. So we read this before, how he divided the Vedas. We didn't read it before. It'll come up in the future. How he took the Vedas and he divided the one Veda into four so they can be compartmentalized and more easily understood, then illustrated the philosophical points in story form, then put them in sutras, the Vedanta Sutra, then ultimately wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, for knowledge, God comes. Naradeva tvamapana surakarya chakirshaya samudra nigrahadini chakre viryanyataparam. In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Rama in order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods. In order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods, he exhibits superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheist King Ravana, was on the other side of the sea. So this is the most fascinating story to absorb ourselves in the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, and also to learn about Dharma, duty, the glory of acting properly, not acting for our own pleasure. But character means to do the right thing. And the right Dharma, I discussed this. We discussed this before. In Chanaka Shloka, it says that from Dharma comes happiness. From doing what's right comes happiness. Because doing what's right means doing what's natural. I made that point again and again. That your Dharma is based on who you are and what you are. So when you act properly, according to your nature, you feel satisfied. So all these stories of the Ramayana and Lord Ramachandra shows the glory of, I also quote Krishna's father, who is Vasudev, and how he gave his word to Kamsa to give all his sons to him to protect Devaki. Now Prabhupada said there is nothing too painful for an honorable man in the discharge of his duty. So we have to actually be convinced that correct behavior is in our best welfare. The story is so fascinating. I always remember the story in India when they had the television serial, the Ramayana. And it was the same time as the parliament. But no one was going to the parliament session. So they had to change the time of the parliament so that they can actually institute some of the laws of the country. Because people would not miss the Ramayana on television. It's such an intriguing story. You should also read this. The Ramayana. No. So, we're not actually finishing this section. 23, the 18th and 19th and 20th incarnations are Krishna. Then the 21st is Lord Buddha. Then Kalki avatar appears. So we'll finish these up. And then in the next class, discuss the Paribhasa Sutra, the theme verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes that although there's so many incarnations, Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, the original. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.